Next case on the calendar, 06-1262, Richard Houck versus Board of Park Commissioners of Huron County Park District. Justice O'Donnell has recused himself in this case, and we're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice O'Donnell, Judge Cynthia Rice, who's a judge of the Court of Appeals, sitting in the 11th Appellate District. Welcome, Judge Rice.
Thank you.
Mr. Rangel.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, if it pleases the court, my name is D. Jeffrey Rangel, and I am here representing the appellants herein. Justices of the court, this appeal relates to the issue of whether the longstanding doctrine of adverse possession, which provides that record title owner of land may lose title to his land if he fails to eject trespassers, may be applied against park districts just as it is applied against private individuals. This appeal does not require the court to address the issue of whether public lands are a valuable public asset, nor is this court required to apply or consider prior Ohio case law prohibiting adverse possession claims against highways, roads, or bridges, because no highway, road, or bridges are involved in the present case. This appeal simply asks the court generally to determine whether the centuries-old concept of adverse possession has continuing usefulness in litigation to clarify real property ownership disputes that involve park districts. The reasons for recognizing the viability of the doctrine of adverse possession generally as to park districts in particular are many. First, an owner who fails to assert ownership within 21 years deserves to lose their property because they slept on their rights. Or as Oliver Wendell Holmes said, sometimes it's said that if a man neglects to enforce his rights, he cannot complain if after a while the law follows its example. Also, if a person is unconcerned about adverse uses, obviously they should deserve to lose the property. Second, the property should be put to its highest and best use. Third, the possessor has earned the land by working it and putting it to use. Fourth, and probably most important, adverse possession provides certainty of title. Fifth, the doctrine of adverse possession does not impose any undue hardship upon park districts different from that of any ordinary citizen. Sixth, adverse possession stimulates the public entity to actively pursue ejectment claims and inventory their property more effectively. And seventh, there are many persons who share the view that our society prefers development to non-development and action to inaction.
Council. Development to parkland?
I'm sorry, you're
right. Our society prefers development to preserving some parkland for people to use as parkland?
Your Honor, I said some people are of that opinion. Obviously, there are different opinions in that area.
Yeah, there sure are.
Appellees would have this.
Council, what's the physical state of this property? It had a railroad,
yes,
an active railroad on it. I assume if it's part of a farming operation, that the rails are gone and the ties are gone and the stone's gone and the fence is gone and the,
Your Honor,
all of that stuff.
Yes, Your Honor, the area probably could be characterized in three areas. The southernmost section is a ditch that's used for drainage for a very large area of farmland. Directly adjacent to that, north of that, was the old active rail line. And directly north of that was an additional approximately one-third of this area. The northernmost one-third area was the area that was under active cultivation by the adjacent property owners up to the active rail ties from about 1949 all the way till the time that the railroad ceased activity, which was in the 1970s. The area that is in the middle that was formerly the active rail line, the ties were removed by the railroad in the mid-70s, and in 1979, actually June to September of 79, the appellants entered the property in order to remove trees, brush, clean out the ditch for their drainage purposes, remove the remaining ties and ballast, and lay down a road and put up a cable gate to the only access to this property from a public highway.
Does this property abut another public park, or is this just a strip they're trying to get through?
It is what's oftentimes referred to as a linear corridor, Your Honor. It is a strip of property that is formerly active rail line that, as oftentimes throughout Ohio, many park districts are acquiring for purposes of what they call linear parkways or trailways.
And they want to use it to create a bike trail, correct?
Eventually, yes.
And if they do, let's say they're successful in this suit and they do, how is that so detrimental to the farmland? The bike trail will go through it just like the railroad goes through it. You have the farm on either side. It's not a very wide strip. How does that so adversely affect your client?
Well, Your Honor, since 1979, not only have my clients been maintaining the property and maintaining the ditch, but this area is extremely important to their farming operations, because we're talking about farming operations that involve semi-trucks that are needed to haul the grain and large harvesters. And semi-trucks can't pull onto plowed fields. They have to have a hard-packed roadway to be able to access portions of those fields. And they use this roadway to access the fields, both at planting and harvesting, and various maintenance things that they do to their farmland.
Is there any reason why you simply can't build the new road right next to the pathway?
Well, yes, no, there is no reason you could build a new road other than the cost and other than the fact that there has been such a long period of time that the appellants have been in possession of this property, that essentially to adopt Appellee's view would prohibit, would raise record title to a level of superiority and ignore adverse possession as any evidence whatsoever. Appellees asked the court to ignore adverse possession as evidence of ownership. And it's appellant's position that effectively record title and adverse possession must be viewed together. Adverse possession is a longstanding doctrine. Record title is a recognition of actual true ownership, factual reality, if you will.
So, counsel, had this property been retained by the railroad and the 21 years had passed, we wouldn't be talking about any controversy here.
That's correct.
But since it was transferred to the Rails to Trails program, that intervention, that change in ownership, is the bar, or alleged bar, to the continuity of the 21 years.
That is the claim, yes. Right. And the lower courts held that, yes.
Now, the use that your clients are contemplating for this is a continuation of what they had previously done, which is the access road. What would if this strip of land was acknowledged as, or deemed to be belonging to your clients by virtue of adverse possession, what does that do to the Rails to Trails program as far as the continuity of their park operation? Because this is not an isolated strip of three-fourths of a mile long, is that correct? I mean, that's part of a continuous state or national program of park usage of land, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, this would interrupt that Rails to Trails that goes the length of quite a bit of Ohio?
Well, the area in question runs a considerable distance through a number of counties, and title to this property was taken jointly with a number of other metro parks from various other counties. It's currently undeveloped and not technically open for use. However, I'm sure they're not prohibiting anyone from using it. But certainly because park districts are governmental entities, they have the right of eminent domain by their enabling statutes. So consequently, if it was determined that, in fact, this property was owned by the appellants by virtue of adverse possession, they could utilize eminent domain just as they could in any other area that they deem important for their operations or for their trails.
So are we engaging in a vain act? Because if this is a segment that you have the bike path, and all of a sudden there's a chunk of it that's three-quarters of a mile long cut off, they're going to exercise eminent domain to keep it. What, aren't we doing a vain act?
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, if determining who owns a piece of property is a vain act, then yes, this is a vain act. If, in fact, we were to decide that is something that the Metro Park should be entitled to have without any proof of ownership, then I think that sets a dangerous precedent.
Well, they have proof of ownership. You're trying to take the ownership away. We have to start with the standard that they have the ownership, and adverse possession is trying to take away somebody else's ownership under some legal principles.
With all due respect, Your Honor, they have record title.
Record title
is is proof of ownership. However,
that's pretty strong proof.
It is not the gold standard.
No.
Obviously, if a person is in possession for a number of years and they obtain another party obtains bare record title, then necessarily is for the court to determine a quiet title action who in fact has the best evidence of title.
And counsel, go ahead and finish
in
that.
In this particular instance, the Metro Parks is asserting that the court should ignore any evidence of actual possession or occupancy, in other words, ignore the factual reality and rely solely on record title.
And so if we were to go out there today, if I understand it correctly, and this has happened in a lot of places with abandoned railroads, is that somebody says, gee, it would be nice to preserve or to have a bike path, horse riding trail, et cetera, on this property, and so they a park district or someone acquires it for that purpose. If we were to go out there today, if I am understanding you correctly, contiguous to the property in question at either end and going in either direction, it's undeveloped at this point.
Yes,
so it's correct. Grown up with shrubs and trees, or if the local farmer is clearing it, it might look clean, and some places it won't. Would that be a fair statement?
Except for this area, yes. All the areas around it are like that. Yes, Your Honor.
Has the park district and your clients been willing to explore a possible mutual accommodation? And in other words, they've improved it, so there is actually something that could be used to get grain trucks in and out and machinery in and out, and to let horses ride and bikes ride in the same area.
In answer to your question, yes, Your Honor, there were extensive attempts to mediate this. As a matter of fact, there were 2 days set aside, separate time periods.
Because it sounds like the uses, if the two competing interests could get together, the uses would accommodate each other.
I agree with you entirely, Your Honor. However, that's why we're here.
You're saying some efforts have been made. I'm interested in what efforts were made to mediate or come to an accommodation.
Well, there were mediations and efforts to see if there was some way of either dividing up the property or allowing access to the property at certain times of years by the appellants for use of their farming operations. And that was...
Couldn't agree.
So the Park District takes the position, we'd rather see this grow up in trees than see the Hawks get their grain trucks up and down.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not here arguing on behalf of the Park District, so I really can't tell you what their argument is, but I can tell you that they do assert full and complete ownership of the entire area.
Isn't the legal issue for us whether anyone can claim by adverse possession land that's held by a political subdivision in Ohio? That's the legal issue, isn't it, for us?
Yes, Your Honor, in more particular park districts. The case before the court is just relating to park districts. And we would turn the court's attention to the analysis that this court conducted in the line of cases, starting with Volk in 1905 and proceeding forward Gibson in 1935 and essentially ending in Brown in 1969. And I see I have 2 minutes left, so I'd like to reserve that for rebuttal.
Before you sit down, let me ask you a question about this attention to park districts. How reasonable is it to expect that a park district, and you started your opening statements by quoting, was it Oliver Wendell Holmes?
Yes, Your Honor.
About the fact that, you know, shame on a person if they don't pay attention to the extent of their land ownership, and if they allow somebody to come in and literally squat on it, they deserve to lose it. Now, we're talking about a park system, oftentimes not just this three-quarters inch or mile, but acres and acres and acres of land here in the state of Ohio. And how realistic is it to expect that every square foot of that is monitored, you know, continuously to assure that there's not any usage?
Your Honor, as I understand Appley's argument, particularly through their amici briefs, it would be impractical for them to erect fences around their boundaries to
or even survey it, on a regular basis to preclude squatters.
Right, and it's our position, Your Honor, that placing boundary markers, in fact, is not an onerous task, and in fact, most metro parks, if you drive past the property, you will see boundary markers showing where the marks of their boundaries are. And the purpose, supposedly,
well, if you're on the roadway driving past it, but they go far off the roadway. That's the beauty of a park.
And virtually every park district has their own police force in the form of park rangers, who have the duty to close the park at night. They police the park in the evening to make sure no one is staying in the park that shouldn't be in the park. That's part of their regular duties. If they can't survey generally to see if there's anyone erecting buildings or otherwise attempting to squat on the land for 21 years, then effectively they don't need the property or they're not doing their job, Your Honor. Because boundary markers, with their active police force, thousands of volunteers that are on the park district all the time, most park districts, in our view, would quickly discover a trespasser, certainly well before 21 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rangel. Ms. Zabella. Zabella, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I'm Joan Zabella on behalf of the six park districts that are the appellees in this case and who are, as the court has noted, the record owner of the strip of land which brings us here today, which is approximately 2 acres out of a 133-acre parcel that was purchased by NORTA, the Northwest Ohio Rails and Trails Association, in 1997. NORTA made that purchase, as the record shows, with a $120,000 grant from the Department of Natural Resources. So we're talking about property here, a small piece of a large piece of property purchased with public money. And that's important, as the court realizes. Park districts are different than private individuals, and the court has recognized this down through the years. I'd like to first address a good issue that I believe Justice Pfeiffer raised. Can't we reach a mutual accommodation here? Well, yes, of course we can. For various reasons, several years ago, a mediation didn't work. But I would direct the court's attention to Revised Code, Chapter 15, and the whole chapter is, or the title, Conservation of Natural Resources. And Title 1519 focuses on recreational trails. This statute goes back to 1992, and in that statute, the General Assembly requires that these rails-to-trails operations be put together in the state of Ohio. And as the court knows, there are lots of them already. They have created some litigation because, as in this case, some contiguous owners don't want park districts and people riding by on bicycles and whatever. 1519.01 says that contiguous owners may use motorized vehicles to cross the trail to manage their land. So in the statute itself, farmers who need access to the land or who need access to a drainage ditch get it. They're not going to be kept from access to whatever they need. They have property on the north side of this strip of land, and they're going to be able to get to it. So it is not something that is going to make a large piece of good Ohio land and got good land in Huron County inaccessible.
But isn't the argument, I would imagine, is that this is a access road for the conveyance of grain or whatever on these large vehicles. They'd probably have to take a part of their acreage and put in their own access road to transport the grain or the farm machinery or whatever. I get the impression they're not interested in just crossing over the path, but in continuous utilization of an access road to the acreage.
Your Honor, there is absolutely nothing in the record that explains or describes what this road is. So we can only guess what it is, and my guess is that it's gravel and that it is something.
You've never been out to the property?
I have not. My partner, a real estate lawyer, has, and he has told me all about it.
That's sort of surprising. But
well, I've seen the videos, and I've talked to my partner, but no, I have not been to the property.
The the problem for adjoining landowners with these railroad properties was the railroads never maintained them quite like they were supposed to, but they did at least maintain them, and periodically, usually after a hot box started a fire someplace, they'd come in and trim the brush that's grown up and the weeds and those kinds of things. Does the Park District have a plan until they can turn this into a suitable riding path to keep it clear from nuisance?
Your Honor, again, there's nothing in the record about this. My understanding is that people from the Park District have gone out there and cleared the rubble themselves, but we don't have that in the record.
I'm not referring just to this property, but I mean a plan presumably wouldn't be a plan that just involved the property in question, but the entire route.
Yes, Your Honor, because we're talking here about 133 acres rails to trails. We are talking about the need to get more public money so that we can actually develop this. Yes, there is a plan, and I expect that this is going to happen fairly soon.
We can't probe. We try not to get into the details of settlement discussion, but we're always interested in seeing parties save legal fees and settle disputes in a mutually satisfying way. And as it just seems here that if the property owner who's asserting ownership is clearing the ditch and maintaining a roadway, that's short-term, long-term benefit to the park, because ditch is being cleared. If that isn't done along the rest of it, you know, people are going to have a swamp to ride through, or poison ivy, or those kinds of things. So it seems like there's a mutuality of benefit if there could be a mutuality of accommodation.
I agree with you, Your Honor. And again, I will say that there's nothing in the record that says that who has cleared the ditch over the years. And I want to go back to the facts of this because I think they're important. As I said, Norta purchased this land in 1997, and the appellants, two of them, Greenacres and Mr. Houck, purchased the contiguous land not until 1998. So we're not talking about a long-term landowner who has put a lot of money into this over the years.
But the present owner is entitled to strap on to the previous owner's
certainly
exercise of dominion.
That is correct. The tacking notion is alive and well in Ohio. Nonetheless, Mr. Houck, when he purchased this land, realized, and he could have gone to the title company or to the records office and discovered that this was planned for rails to trails, that the land contiguous to his was planned to rails to trails. And therefore, what we have focused on in this lawsuit is that the 19 years is all we have for the 21 years necessary for adverse possession. We do not agree, and there's been an effort to push this case into the Brown box and to say that this is indistinguishable from the Brown case. Not true. In Brown, the party stipulated to all the elements of adverse possession except the running of the period. We didn't stipulate to anything. As far as we were concerned, since the adverse possession would be cut off after 19 years, there was no reason to go into the hostile adverse.
And the cutoff is the stopping the clock at 19 years is based on the acquiring of title by the Park District.
By the Park District, yes. And that was
So while you're not, you're saying we haven't agreed to the elements of adverse possession having been established, or that's arguably still in dispute. This is a summary judgment. You do acknowledge that the clock started to run 19 years prior to your acquiring title.
Only for the purposes of summary judgment, because it didn't matter to us what the other elements were, because in Grace versus Koch, which this court unanimously decided in 1998, the court determined that the standard of proof is clear and convincing evidence, and that if one of the elements isn't met, then everything falls to pieces. And we would urge the court to apply that case, the Grace case, here when you're talking. Now, that was between private parties. Here you're talking about the public and the public interest. And as has been noted here, park districts really can't be expected to police everything they own. Sometimes, as here, when they get a grant, they're able to purchase land, but they don't have the money to develop it quite yet.
And are you prepared to represent, if the park district prevails, that there would still be open to an accommodation of the adjoining owner? I'll have the same question for him.
I see no reason why we would not, Your Honor. I see no reason at all why we would not. I mean, park districts need to keep the goodwill of local citizens, large landowners, small landowners, because we go to them every so often and ask for money. And you know, the purpose of the park district is land for everybody, and we certainly want to keep the goodwill of local residents, including farmers. And there's been a lot of misunderstanding around the state, and that's why these cases have come up about what rails to trails really.
Let me take you to the, we've got a little more than 4 minutes left. I'd like to take you to the legal issue. Mr. Ringel has given us reasons that we should adopt a rule of law, I guess, that would say, in effect, that private citizens should be permitted to adversely possess public property or park district property. You suggested at page 24 of your brief a bright line test that's 180 degrees, of course, the other direction, that private citizens should not be able to adversely possess public property or park district property. What are your strongest arguments for us arguing in favor of us to adopt that as a rule of law?
Well, I think stare decisis is certainly a very strong argument. Aside from the Brown case, this court has not held that political subdivisions can be dispossessed of publicly held land by private parties. I think that's our strongest argument. That in general, and then the specific purposes of park districts under 1519 and 1545 to purchase and conserve land and to allow the public to use land. We cited, Your Honor, the Labortec case, which is a pretty interesting law review article. Doesn't have a whole lot to do with Ohio because Professor Labortec is concerned with proprietary activities, and that hasn't really been an issue in Ohio. I mean, this is governmental activities. And she addresses, and I would say refutes, most of the arguments that the appellant made at the beginning of his argument. So, I mean, that's a very quick way, given that I only have 15 minutes, to discuss, and yet not to discuss, some of the other arguments that were made. But I think it's quite clear that there are no equities on the side of a trespasser, especially when you are dealing with land that is held by the public. And that was recognized by the court in Grace, where, and I'll quote, the court quoted from Thompson on real property, "There are no equities in favor of a person seeking to acquire property of another by adverse possession." And that case was decided before the recent Hortman case, in which this case found that political subdivisions aren't subject to estoppel or latches. So I think those are our strongest arguments, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And how do you distinguish the Brown case?
How do I distinguish the Brown case? The purpose of school districts is different than the purpose of park districts. A school district has a building and a playground. Park districts have land that goes on and on forever. And the enabling legislation, while when you look at the enabling legislation, they can contract, they both can contract, and they both can own property. But if you read that with 1548, you see that the park districts are very, very different animals than school districts.
Ms. Verla, in a sense, the state is holding this property in trust, or the park district is holding this property in trust for the benefit of all the citizens of the state, is it not?
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor.
So when we had the argument or the question here about whether the park district should be paying attention to all the pieces of its property, I mean, even if it makes a mistake or doesn't do what it should as far as looking at every piece of property, the taxpayers or the state as a whole should not be penalized for that, as it would if it were an individual owner.
Well, I would certainly agree, and having bought the property once for $122,000, and that's certainly more than this small portion, do we have to buy it again? It simply doesn't make much sense at all. And many of these trails are open. I mean, this is a small but a very important part of what we have and what the General Assembly has contemplated. If I read the lights correctly, I think my time is up.
Read the lights correctly.
I would request the court to affirm the 6th
Thank you,
district.
Mr. Bella. Mr. Verla. Mr. Ringo, you've used your time, but it may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Ringo, in fairness, I'll ask you the same question. If your clients prevail, would they still be willing to discuss accommodation with the park district?
Well, Your Honor, this is the first time I've heard that the park district is willing to discuss an accommodation. Of course, this is not on the record, but we were often met in the mediation with a hardline rule that it's their property, and the most that at any time they're in mediation that I recall personally, any discussion would be the possibility of allowing them on to clean out the ditch but not use it for any other purpose. And in fact, the county very well could be doing that themselves, given the fact that it's a county ditch.
Could you help me understand here on the right the property involved? Reading the briefs, it appeared to me that part of it is under cultivation, being farmed. But the discussion here today is only about a ditch and access. So, is it both, did I misread the briefs?
You're absolutely correct, Your Honor. The northern one-third portion of this linear area has been under active cultivation since 1949, and the trial court and the Court of Appeals both filed the Barnhart case and said that the Barnhart case stood for the proposition that it should not act, cultivation should not act as adverse grounds for adverse possession. However, there are many other cases. For example, Elitchin versus Akron Associated Investment that we cited, even the 1540 Columbus Corp case, which involved the building underneath the bridge. The court said by analogy, using a building for storage that's already owned by someone else.
No, that's fine. I mean, I've got that. I just wanted to clarify in terms of the usages here.
Right, so since 1949, the one-third portion was in fact, after 21 years, owned by my clients and their predecessors. The other section is still occupied effectively by my appellants today, and the letter essentially telling them to get off the property was not sent until February 2001, more than 21 years later. That's why the title issue has been raised as so important by appellees, because that is the only thing that they can raise to cut off the 21-year time period. And it's our position, we're not asking the court to make new law. We're simply asking the court to follow law that they set forth going back as far as 1882 with the Oxford Township versus Columbia case that said townships and municipalities can be adversely possessed against. There's a statute that says cities can be adversely possessed. There's a statute that says adverse possession gets cut off. You cannot eject people after 21 years. And there's no exception in that statute that says except for municipalities or except for political entities. I'm sorry.
You've used your time, Mr. Ringel.
If I may finish very quickly, the enabling statutes of all these entities allow contracts relating to real property and sue and be sued relating to real property, which necessarily would involve both the defense and the sword of adverse possession by both parties, rather than as the appellees assert just against them.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Marshal, please adjourn court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye.